Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Elizabeth Warren doubles down on Medicare for all, but her math on the financing and the medical costs is being criticized on the left and the right. Could this be the issue that costs her the Democratic nomination, or is she right politically to go in this direction? Welcome, I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and to discuss this, the Democratic presidential campaign, my colleagues, Kyle Peterson. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
And Bill McGurn. Bill, how
are
you?
Hey, Paul.
Okay, so let's, I think it's a fascinating moment in the Democratic campaign. Elizabeth Warren had been criticized for having a big asterisk filled in where the details of her support for Medicare for All was. And now she's filled that in, not entirely. There's still a huge debate about the details, but she has filled in some details and has tried to work out the math that she says will add up to make it a plan that is does provide better health care coverage for all Americans, and also makes the numbers add up in revenues and cost reductions. Just to give you a general sense of what she's talking about, she concedes in her 20-page white paper summarizing her ideas, was released Friday, that overall it would cost $52 trillion. That is what she, that is what we spend on health care over the next 10 years, what we're estimated to do it, public and private. She would put all of that on the public books. And she then says, okay, $16 trillion of that or so, $16 trillion would be what we spend now on Medicare and Medicaid over that decade. Another $6 trillion would be kicked in by the states as part of Medicaid and the children's health care plan. That still leaves about $30 trillion. And she breaks that down and says she can save about $10 trillion in cost savings and then raise another $20 trillion or so in various revenue measures. I've looked at this in some detail, and I have to say that it is the numbers just aren't there. Her costs savings wouldn't add up, and her revenues wouldn't materialize to the extent she claims they will. Nonetheless, she claims it will. And I guess the big political question, gentlemen, is she right? This will help her by being so specific, Bill.
Well, look, the reason she's being asked this question now, not by just the Wall Street Journal, but by the other Democrats, is she's perceived as the front runner, right? That was clear in the last debate. So I think they might have let it slide earlier on. I agree substantively that I think she would have been better with the Bernie explanation, which Stephen Colbert tried to force on her, say, yes, taxes will go up, but you'll be better off overall. So it seems to me now it's not a question. In other words, I don't think she's burned the bridge behind her on this issue.
This is out there. She has to defend these numbers.
I'm not sure it's such a terrible move. I mean, it doesn't add up for us. The others are going to attack her because it's a weakness in her plan. But I'm just not sure in general the argument among Democratic voters that this is too expensive or we may be taxing the rich too much is necessarily a killer. I mean, right now, she's still ahead, I believe, in the averages in the Iowa and New Hampshire polls, right? And I think as long as that holds, she's going to stick with it. I don't think she can she'll look very weak if she backtracks now. I think she has to put her foot on the gas pedal and hope people, you know, don't dwell on the questions that are being asked now.
To me, it looks like she has replaced one big asterisk with many asterisks. I mean, just to start with the taxes, the numbers don't add up. Nonpartisan analysts who know a lot about the budget and all this kind of things say she's very short. So that's one issue. A second is that she has said that under her plan, the only people who are going to be paying more taxes are billionaires with a B, billionaires. And obviously, that's not true. This plan involves some taxing of employers, which would basically fall on workers.
Just to elaborate on that, Kyle, it's called an employer Medicare contribution. So instead of your company pays you for your health care plan, they pay a premium on your behalf if they cover you for health care. Under her plan, essentially Dow Jones would pay to the federal government and to the tune across the economy of $8.8 trillion in these employer contributions over 10 years, which really means that that is a tax on middle class, because it means the company would have less money to provide for you in salaries and benefits.
Right. And then the third, which to me could potentially be the biggest liability, is these cost savings that she's talking about. So doctors are going to be paid at Medicare rates. Hospitals are going to be paid at slightly above Medicare rates, which is a huge cut from what private insurance pays. And, you know, if one of her competitors wants to make that point, you know, he or she could say this is a huge cut in payments to doctors, to hospitals. And how does she expect that that's going to have no effect on the quality of care or the availability of care? Or to take a second example, she's talking about saving 70% on the prices of branded prescription drugs. I mean, just look at the news stories. It seems like every day there is a new story about some incredible innovation coming out of a drug company treating some terrible disease like cystic fibrosis. And one of her, you know, on the debate stage, one of her competitors could say to all of the people out there who are watching who are benefiting from these drugs, if you have a family member or a friend with cystic fibrosis, with muscular dystrophy, I mean, this is going to be a real killer for innovation and for new therapies.
I will say, Kyle, I don't see any of the Democrats on the stage going to defense of big pharma in that way. Although I agree with you that they ought to. I think it's fascinating. You say, Bill, taxing the rich too much, but you know, at what point do you just try to tax too many people too much? Right. I mean, you've got a financial transactions tax here. You've got raising the corporate tax rate to 35% back from 21 without any deferral of foreign income. It's essentially a global minimum tax for corporations chartered in America of 35%, competing against foreign competitors who pay 12.5 or 19 or 17 or whatever it is. You've got a tax proposal to tax unrealized capital gains. That means even if you don't sell the stock, but its value goes up this year, you pay a tax on that. I mean, that's it. And then she's doubled her wealth tax on billionaires from 3% to 6%. So, I mean, this is, and then you have the middle class tax, that employer contribution, and there's still more. I can't put it all in one answer. I mean, at what point do you say, you think that might be a bridge too far?
Well, that's, I think that's the problem. Her plan is built on one dubious assumption after another. And also the other assumption is that all these things going in, even if they did what she claims they're going to do, that they don't have other consequences for where people invest, where they hide their money, and so forth. And it's why some of the traditional executives, I think Zuckerberg was one of them, right, who are concerned about her winning, people that would normally be expected to fall in line behind a Democrat. I'm still not certain it's a killer with Democratic voters. And we're going to find out, because I think she has no choice but to go ahead. And we'll see if it's a passing kerfuffle, you know, where the guys try to make the case against her at the next debate and then they move on, or whether it fails her now. If it doesn't fail her, if she ends up not being harmed and being the nominee, it will still do harm in that the kind of things you were mentioning before, the critiques by other people, by Buttigieg, by Amy Klobuchar, they will doubtlessly be picked up by the Republicans and Trump. You know, some of the language that this is a tax on the middle class, that's going to be played over and over and over again if Donald Trump ends up running against Elizabeth Warren.
We're talking about Elizabeth Warren's new details in her Medicare for All plan, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal with Bill McGurn and Kyle Peterson. And Bill, you're making the point that you're not sure that this is going to hit her because
killer in the sense that Democratic voters are used to people proposing
big,
cockamamie spending schemes that never work out the way they say.
Well,
they
let me get. I think it's going to be litigated politically in a very significant way because this has now become so central to her candidacy.
And she's a front runner.
And she's a front runner. But here's what Joe Biden's spokeswoman said on the weekend. She claims Warren is lowballing the cost of her plan by well over $10 trillion and isn't telling the truth about her taxes that would come out of workers' pockets and that would require even further taxes on the middle class to pay for the estimates or underestimates of the cost savings. I think that argument is going to be repeated and repeated and repeated on stage. And if I were Biden, I would go after it. If I were Klobuchar, I would go after it. If I were Buttigieg, I would go after it. And I would link it to the issue of electability and say, this is the issue that can re-elect Donald Trump. Healthcare has been our advantage as Democrats. It helped us win in 2018. You're giving it up by basically saying we're going to nationalize 1/6 of the U.S. economy and deny people 170 million Americans a private health insurance, and you're going to do all these other things to pay for it.
Yeah, I agree in the sense that if she wins, that it, what Biden just said is an in-kind contribution to the Trump campaign.
But you don't think that that can prevail among Democratic primary voters?
I think it could prevail. But the fact is right now she's doing well in Iowa and New Hampshire. And it looks like Biden's sinking. You know, Biden's whole argument is electability. And I agree on the issues. You know, he's a more moderate candidate. But as a candidate, I'm not sure. And it actually doesn't matter what I think, but it looks like Democratic voters are losing enthusiasm for that
idea. Bill, it always matters what you think. But Kyle, let's talk about this point on the politics, because I guess I would disagree with Bill, and I would say that what he might and turn out to be right. But so far, this has not been really litigated in a very significant way, that it's going to be, I think, if these other Democrats are serious about beating her, they've got to take this on frontally. And then we'll find out whether this is, in fact, a political liability, even in a Democratic primary.
Yeah, and it could become a Elizabeth Warren pylon in these next debates, especially as some of those candidates who are still trying to break through, Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, try to make themselves a viable alternative to the Sanders-Warren duopoly, and then Biden as this kind of staggering frontrunner. But any of them, and even Biden, I think, could, to your point about, Democrats want to beat Donald Trump. That's what they want to do first and foremost. And any of them could bring some polling with them to the debate stage and talk about that. I mean, there's a poll out this week that has, in a head-to-head between Trump and Elizabeth Warren, Trump up by 6 in Michigan, up by 4 in Florida, up by 3 in North Carolina. Whereas Biden is closer and winning some of those states, and even Sanders is polling better than Warren. And so I mean, I do think this is another huge liability for her. If you're Biden, you have to make the case strongly that independents are not going to vote for an agenda like this.
Yeah, I think that is that's a key point that these Democrats have to make. And what I also see currently is the a kind of coalition forming of the establishment experts, Democrats, who are now coming to the fore and saying some of her ideas don't work. Larry Summers, for example. The Democratic economist who worked for Clinton, Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, worked in the White House with Barack Obama, saying the numbers on her wealth tax are fanciful. He thinks it'll raise something like 1/7 of the revenue that she claims it will. I think her figure is $2.75 trillion before her recent increase. Now it's 3.6, is it, Kyle? Something like that. He thinks it'll be a lot less. You have Stephen Ratner, who was a Barack Obama Democrat, writing in the New York Times that her economic plan would be destructive. I think you're going to see more of this bill come out. And this could, I think, put a doubt. I mean, look, experts can be ignored. She'll claim they work. But she's an outlier even among Democratic health economists and mainstream economists on some of this.
Yeah. I mean, I think the next debate is this is what it's going to be about, right? Because, first of all, it's the one wedge that the other candidates have to go after. Again, the two interesting questions to me is say they succeed in discrediting her, right? You can't pay for this and so forth. Do the voters then go to Biden because he says we're not going to do this? Or do they go to Bernie, who said, no, we are going to raise taxes, but my plan actually is up front and pays for it and you'll be better off? I don't know where they go. And I would again just say that, you know, these politicians have short-term views. They're not thinking of the general the polls might show in a general election, but that campaign hasn't really started. And they're looking at the short term. And Mrs. Warren is looking at Iowa and New Hampshire. And if you look at her polls compared to Biden's polls, you see this incredible upward trajectory over time, over the last few months. Remember, Biden, I think, at one point was 41 points ahead of Bernie Sanders back in April or May. And he's been flagging since then. So I think if I understand you right, what it's going to really make for is a very interesting debate that would actually be kind of a substantive debate because people would have to answer specific questions the next time. And we'll see who has some of these other guys. They're also going to have numbers too, right? They're going to crunch numbers and say, how are you going to do this? And Bernie's going to say, I agree, her numbers don't add up. That's why I've always said, yes, we'll raise taxes, but you're going to be better off.
Well, and it's also the her latest details are going to provide fodder for ads. I mean, they're going to be. Remember, exactly. We're still early in Iowa, and Iowa, which is in early February, often the caucuses come together late in terms of support, and there's a shift sometimes. So there's going to be a lot that goes on, and
it could be possible there that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie split that vote for Medicare for All, and Joe Biden comes out a little stronger because he's the guy saying this is just, you know, outside the realm of possibility.
Why Democrats, a lot of Democrats support Warren is she looks like a fighter. She looks like she's tenacious. And that's the argument I think she'll come back with and say, if you guys won't even try, you'll never get anything done. I'm going to try. And she said, and she'll say, I think they look at her and say, she could stand up to Trump. And that's part of her appeal. And I guess the question in my mind would be, does that kind of sort of manner and tone and strength that she projects trump some of these, sorry about the word, these details when it comes to Medicare for All?
It could, but you know, especially for a certain segment of very devoted activist progressive on the left side of the party. But there's a lot of people in the middle of the party who, you know, have not bought into this agenda. And I do think that her evasiveness and lack of answers to some of these hard questions matters to people. And, you know, you were speaking about some of the Elizabeth Warren critics now coming out of the woodwork and saying these plans don't add up. I've been struck just in the change in the tenor of the press coverage. I mean, so the New York Times has a headline, billionaires only. Warren errs in saying whom her health plan would tax. I mean, that is going to matter to people who are picking that up and reading it. The Washington Post has
almost unheard of by the New York Times, critical of Elizabeth Warren.
The Washington Post has a headline, children are the losers in Elizabeth Warren's plan for charter schools. That's an unsigned editorial. I mean, essentially saying children are the losers in Elizabeth Warren's education plan. I mean, that change in the tenor of the coverage from, you know, here's this this brilliant professor with all these ideas to, you know, maybe some of these ideas are not actually going to work, I think is a big thing.
The subtext of those stories, and I think we're going to see more, is, you know what? She could lose to Trump, and we can't take that risk. That's the subtext of those stories, that Elizabeth Warren is too vulnerable because she's too far left on a lot of these ideas, and we need to nominate somebody who isn't as vulnerable. I think that's the subtext.
And Democrats are saying that. I mean, yes. Donors, the donor class, a lot of people that would normally go along are publicly saying they worry she's too far left. I think, look, there's two parts of Elizabeth Warren. One is on these issues, she's scaring people that she's going to be easy for Trump to defeat because she's so leftist and he'll make all the arguments the Democrats are going to do and she'll go down. On the other hand, I think, Paul, you made a good point. I think people like her. She does have an appeal. I mean, I'm someone that probably disagrees with her on every single issue. And when I watch some of her rallies where she's haranguing people, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. That said, I can see her one-to-one with Donald Trump in a way I can't see Joe Biden holding up, because Joe Biden has, I think, too much of an angry look and trying to out-Trump Trump, which I don't think is the way to win. I could see Elizabeth Warren holding her own, being unflappable in the debate, not on the substance, but in the debate.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think that she does have that appeal.
And she doesn't have that look of entitlement that Hillary Clinton had, right? If she gets a nomination, it will be because she fought for it hard and, you know, put herself in the pile, not because she went in a rigged primary process. You know, she started out way down, you know, below these guys and rose up on her own.
But I think this Medicare for All plan that she puts out is now, this is a decisive moment in my view in the campaign, critical moment, because this is now going to be a central point of debate going forward right through the primaries. And unless Bernie and she are the last two people standing, which I don't think they will be, you're going to have somebody taking her on this. All right, gentlemen, thank you. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.